Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Sydney, and I am back on my holly jolly bullshit.
Yeah, this is where I figured this was going. Hi, Maya. I do not partake in the Christmas cheer.
But today she will be. I'm kind of forcing you to.
I don't know what today is, so I don't.
Today's the Christmas episode, like I do every single year, where I make Maya partake into one piece of Christmas fanfiction of my choosing. And today I have a fun one. It's a fandom of neither of ours particularly a huge fan of.
Okay.
Oh, we'll get to it.
Okay.
So last year, I've done this three times now. Christmas is my favorite season. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite holiday. I love everything about Christmas.
Right.
So I put together like a fun little, I find like a holiday fan fiction. Last year I did Merlin, which was a fan fiction that was, like, in the basis of A Christmas Carol by Dickens himself.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, or the year before, I did something that was Hallmark inspired, because I love Hallmark Christmas movies. I know they are maybe not the best, maybe not the best put together or written or acted things, but I love them dearly. I love them so much. And so this year, I will be going back to my roots. I will be going back to my bullshit. And we're doing a fan fiction inspired by a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Okay.
In the fandom of Glee.
The thing is, Glee was a little before I was, like, fully able to, like, understand and comprehend television. Yeah. Like, I caught my parents watching it a lot when it was very popular, but I was never allowed to sit and watch it because of the content itself.
Glee had a lot of crazy shit every episode.
Yeah, because even when I finally was old enough to be like, what the fuck was that show?
Yeah.
I never made it through the first season.
Okay.
I, like, couldn't do it. I was just like, I don't understand why this was popular. Yeah. It's really bad.
Yeah.
And then I had a bunch of friends.
Because it was really bad.
Oh, 100%. And then a bunch of friends were like, oh, no, this one chick gets pregnant. And then this happens. Yep. And then this happens. And I'm like, oh.
Yep.
So it's not at all what high school is like.
Nope.
That's interesting.
It was very much like Degrassi, Secret Life of an American Teenager, Pretty Little Liars, but, like, without the mystery, but with singing. And every episode they do like themes. It would be like, maybe not themes, sometimes they'd have things, like they'd have the Britney Spears episode, or they'd have like the Prince episode, and they did have Christmas episodes. They had like it was like a Very Merry Gleamus or something like that. Like, they had Christmas episodes because of course they did, but they were always singing, and some of those bitches, they were good. They were so good. But it was really popular in middle school when I was growing up. And I didn't watch it during middle school because I didn't care about it at the time.
That's fair.
But I watched it later in life with my sister. She just, like, put it on and I sat down one day and just, like, continued watching it. We never finished it.
Spoilers, that's probably for the better.
But also, spoilers for life, we didn't get past. We watched the episode where Cory Monteith dies.
That the main character, that Lea Michele's character.
Lea Michele's character's boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah. Even though he got the other girl pregnant?
No. Okay. So what happened there?
Okay, never mind. I don't need to know. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
He died in real life.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and so they had like
everyone was like, oh my god!
He also died like during the run of the show, so then they had a memorial episode for Corey on the show, and so we never made it past that episode. But yeah, that show was like fucking crazy. Yeah, like,
I forgot that was still on air when he died.
When he died. There's like, and a lot of, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of shit that goes on, and I think retrospectively looking at that show, you can, like, people look back and they're like, so what the fuck was going on with Will Schuster? Why were you acting like that?
All I remember is that era on TikTok, like last year, the year before, where it was like, jump scare!
Warning.
What's the actor's name? It was really bad, though.
Matthew Morrison.
Yeah. Matthew Morris, a jump scare.
Matthew Morris, a jump scare. You remember when he was like on, he would like played the Grinch?
Yes.
On, like,
because everyone was like, why?
Yeah.
We're over this white man.
Warning. Matthew Morrison. And of course people look back and they're like, Will Schuster, Matthew Morrison, what are you doing? What are you doing with that child? Matthew Morrison, that's a 16-year-old. What are you doing? Even like episode one, it was a show that, like, first of all, would have never gotten past even the first season, if not less than, if it came out today.
No.
Because the first episode of Glee is crazy. But it's like, obviously, Will Schuster is like trying to keep the Glee Club going. So he like blackmails, but like wrongly blackmails Corey's character. Because it's like, I found drugs. No, he didn't. He planted those drugs in there. So now he's blackmailing this this like kid to join his Glee club so that it doesn't get shut down. And then there's like a bunch of other kids from the football
team. They
also
had like ableism and racism. Yeah.
They had the entire first season, they had a character who like faked a stutter. And then one episode she was just like, the stutter was fake. And then she never spoke in a stutter ever again. They obviously had the kid in the wheelchair who like in real life, he doesn't use a wheelchair.
Yeah, that's fucking tough.
And then like yikes. The whole thing with the pregnancy is that like Corey's character is dating a cheerleader, a Cheerio, and she gets pregnant.
Sue Sylvester, my beloved.
Sue Sylvester. She gets pregnant from another kid. He's like also on the football team.
Oh.
And he had also with Glee, like the fascination of Glee is like what happened to the characters after the show, because there was one who got like caught for pedophilia. There was Naya Rivera died like mysteriously. She drowned.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was like what's going on with all of these, like Cory Monteith obviously like died of an OD. Like that
cursed,
I think
cursed cast.
I think that's what's keeping Glee around for as long as it is, honestly, is like the craziness of the actual show where like so Corey's girlfriend gets pregnant and she tells him that it's his baby, that she got pregnant from them like doing stuff in the hot tub.
I do remember this now, because he was so dumb that he believed
they were also in like some Christian club, like
yeah, I do remember.
So they were like, we got pregnant from the hot tub. And then he like believed it when it's like, no, she got pregnant from the other guy.
The guy who inserted his penis into her.
Into her, yeah.
Crazy.
So that show was just like riddled with like crazy homophobia.
Oh, yeah.
They had a storyline where it was like the bully who bullied Kurt.
I do remember that too. Now that
turned out to be gay.
Yeah.
And that was the joke that like convinced everyone that Darren Criss was a gay man, which he's not.
Mm.
That was like the show where everyone was like, yeah, he's, they had Darren Criss play a gay man and he's not gay. And then they also had Jonathan Groff, who played a straight man, who is a gay man.
Interesting. I didn't know Jonathan Groff was in that show.
Yes, he's in a rival a cappella like Glee club from like a different club. And then he has an entire like romance arc with Lea Michele's Rachel Berry.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that show was messy.
I mean, like it still shouldn't have been on TV.
Yeah.
10 years ago, the fact that there's like rampant pedophilia, strike number one,
homophobia.
Come on, conservatives, don't we want to save the children or whatever?
Literally.
What the fuck?
There is an episode where Rachel Berry is like a senior and she's auditioning for something. She wants to get like some part in the Glee or the musical or whatever. And there's a freshman who's also going for the same part. So the address that Rachel gives her sends her to a crack house.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's not okay.
So many things wrong with this show, but it has ingrained itself into pop culture somehow. Like you said, Sue Sylvester.
Love her.
Love her.
I literally...
This is how
again,
Sue sees it.
I watched less than a season of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Hated Sue Sylvester. The memes make up for it.
Yeah.
Everything I've seen from the latter half of this show, I'm like, yeah, she was the by far the best thing that show ever had to offer.
Yeah.
And she was real as fuck, too.
They wanted me to believe that she was the villain and not Matthew Morrison.
No, it definitely was.
It definitely was. He was the villain, 100%. You can't tell me that man... Well, he had a lot of other shit going on where it's like, he was like emotionally, or maybe also physically, but definitely emotionally cheating on his wife while he believed that she was pregnant.
Yes, I do remember that, because I remember seeing his wife for the first time and I was like, she's really cute.
Yep.
What's wrong with him?
Yep. And then like, I'm again supposed to believe that he's the true hero who brings the Glee Club together.
He played the Grinch later in life. I don't trust that man.
I don't trust that man. There was also like so much with the production of the show. Like there were better people or better singers, I should say, than Lea Michele that like never got the screen time. Like the woman who plays Mercedes and Naya Rivera who played Santana.
Yeah.
Santana and Brittany, my first introduction to lesbians. I love them so much. They're the best. And Brittany had she had the best running gag I've ever seen because her name was Brittany S. Pierce. I love her for it. They had, I think, 2 or 3 Britney Spears episodes. And of course, they're always Brittany S. Pierce. And it was the best bit ever. The best gag of television ever. But yeah, like Santana and Mercedes both had like, they were better singers than Rachel.
Oh no. And I've seen interviews with Michelle. Is that her name?
Lea Michele.
And No.
Amber Riley.
Yeah, I remember seeing the interview. Z-Way from Z-Way show where she's like, you said some things about one of your co. It makes me laugh every time. Because we all know it's true. We all know Lea Michele's a piece of shit.
Yes.
We all know it. She does not deserve to be famous.
It was the funniest thing that came out. I remember at like the beginning of COVID, that was like people coming out being like, Lea Michele acted some sort of way towards the black people on the set and some sort of way around like people who were only guest stars and like guest stars who were not already like hugely famous, like some Broadway people who they got on the show.
Right.
They were like, oh, that was Lea Michele wasn't acting. She just was Rachel Berry. That's who she was deep inside.
And that's unfortunate.
That's unfortunate.
Because that's fucking tough.
Yeah. And especially since it's like, again, Rachel Berry was the main character. No one I know likes Rachel Berry.
No. Highly unlike. I think that's why I dropped the show. Because she's unlikable. Why am I only going to watch a show for the side characters?
Yeah. But then like I will say like deeper into the show, the side characters become main characters. Like again with Santana and Kurt and everything. I understand that.
But it's still just like.
Yeah.
Why make the main character unlikable from the beginning and have no redeeming qualities?
And she like, just never changes.
No.
She just never changes.
And it's not worth my time.
She's always awful.
Right.
But someone I did love wholly throughout the entire thing was Kurt Hummel. I loved Kurt Hummel. And he got really, like, he popped off. He didn't get famous. He is, like, he, like, writes books now.
Oh, good for him.
Chris Colfer. He, like, won an Emmy, I'm pretty sure, for playing Kurt in Glee.
Oh, my God. Good for him.
That's awesome. He won a Golden Globe Award for Best Supporting Actor while on Glee as Kurt Hummel. He has, like, a Grammy nomination, and he has, like, written a bunch of books, Struck by Lightning, Land of Stories. As of September 2021, he has published 18 books.
Oh, my
so
God.
So he's, like, an author now. That's like, awesome. I don't think he really acts anymore, but he's, like, an author.
That's cool.
But he got, like, his claim to fame. I don't even want to say claim to fame, but he got, like, really popular on TikTok because he has one song in Glee.
Yeah.
The everything's coming up, Kurt.
Oh. Well, someone tell me, when is it my turn? Don't I get a dream for myself? Starting now, it's gonna be my turn. Gangway girl, get off of my runway. Starting now, I bat 1,000. This time, boys, I'm taking the 1,000.
Chris Colfer, ate that.
Because even then, I've seen, like, TikToks of all of the main actresses from that show who have performed that before. And it will say, the OG, she fucking slayed. I don't know what her name was. I don't know what show it is. I don't even know what the song name is. But she fucking went in hard. I was like, I feel you, girl. What is it? My turn.
I feel that in my soul. I've never related more. Bette Midler.
Yeah.
That was Bette Midler on... Oh, Rose's Turn is the song. It's from Gypsy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard of... I think I've heard of the show.
I think I've heard of the show, too. But to me, that was Kurt Hummel. And again, the same way you were like, Bette Midler, you're like, when is it going to be? I felt that for Kurt.
Oh,
get off of my runway.
Yeah.
That, when is it my turn, Kurt? You're right. Everything's coming up, Kurt. Everything's coming up, Hummel.
Real.
Yep. So I always loved him. I think that, like, in the time where, like, I stopped watching Glee, I, like, looked up. Because when I stopped watching Glee, everyone had, like, graduated from high school. And so I always thought that was, like, kind of cool where they, like, graduated high school and now they're, like, doing new things. When I finished... Not when I finished, but like when I stopped watching Glee, he and Rachel had moved to New York and he didn't get into this like singing college. It wasn't like Juilliard. They called it something else. And he started working for like a fashion magazine, kind of like Vogue. And I always really liked that for his storyline because it was just like, yeah, you know what? Not everyone's going to make it. Musical theater. You know what I mean? Right. We got to do different things. And I always liked, again, like Kurt and Blaine's relationship. I was just like, there were so many things like Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
I'm so sorry. They ate. I'm so sorry. If it's a crime to like the Glee version more than the real version, lock me up, okay? There's a couple of those.
Okay, girl. Goddamn.
I did see there was a tweet that I saw when Spotify Raps came out. And it was person, she posted the, like, the meme of, like, the person breaking the chain, like, their handcuffs. Oh, yeah. And they're like, the Glee cast is no longer one of my top five artists.
That's tough. That's really bad.
Listen, when sometimes they do better. Sometimes it's better. I'm sorry. Shout out to the girl who got the Glee cast off of her Spotify Wrapped top five artists of the year. That must have felt great since you've been had them on since 2012, probably. Mm-hmm. But I always love whenever something like Glee comes around, because there's always that meme of, like, if Glee was still around, they'd, like, Will Schuster would have done a cover of, what was that, like, Sam Smith that came out last year?
Oh, yeah.
They're like, they would have made Matthew Morrison do a cover of that song. Or, like, they would have had an episode with all the Asian cast doing, like, a BTS episode. Like, they would have done
that. Oh, 100%.
They would have done that.
Rampant racism.
Yes. They would have had Naya Rivera singing Rosalia every second that she could get. It's so bad, but it was so good while it lasted. And I'm kind of glad that it exists, because nothing like that will ever exist again.
Good riddance.
They gave me This Is How Sue Sees It. And I have to thank them for that.
Sue Sylvester.
I have to thank them for that.
She was in the Wreck-It Ralph movie as the hot mommy.
Yes, she was. She was the hot, tall
mommy. It always, like, throws me off guard, because I'm like, Sue Sylvester.
You could have her. You could have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She slays. No, like, on a side tangent, she, like, yeah. Jane Lynch as a person, mm-hmm. So funny.
She is. I think the funniest part of Glee is that the fact that they give you, like, the characters we're supposed to hate, and those became our favorite characters.
I think that happens with most TV shows, though. Mm-hmm. It's like, slowly over time, you get used to the way that they are, and you're like, yeah this is funny.
I'm sorry that you wrote Sue Sylvester to be such a funny bitch, okay? That's not my fault.
She bullies the principal.
She does. The only character she likes is the little girl with Down syndrome.
Slay.
Slay! That's the only character she likes in the whole show.
Right. And even then, I was just watching a TikTok earlier, or an Instagram reel of something, where she was, like, talking to Kurt. She was like, liking musical theater doesn't make you gay. That just means you're awful. It's like, slay queen.
She ate that. I'm so sorry.
She's right.
She could step on me, spit in my face, and shoot me out of a cannon, which she did to the Cheerios.
Oh, nice.
She made them. She was like, to win regionals, we gotta shoot you bitches out of a cannon.
And flying, they win.
Yeah. And I love that it was like, it wasn't like the Glee Club going up against, like, the football team. It was the Cheerios. They were the ones getting the most money. They were the ones getting the biggest budget. And at some point of the show, you're like, they deserve it. I don't see you being shot out of a cannon.
This is real.
So sorry.
They're singing, you know, Lady Gaga on a Saturday afternoon.
You're being shot out of a cannon. While 9 months pregnant.
We are
okay?
Different.
And also, some of those lines are the funniest lines. There's, like, a fight between Santana. Oh, what's the other blonde girl, the one who gets pregnant? Her name's, like, Gwen or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
And they're getting in a fight between, like, her getting knocked up at 16 and then, like, getting, like, breast implants. And it's, like, the funniest fight.
You did this to me. You told Coach Sylvester about my summer surgery.
You have a surgery when you get your appendix out. You got a boob job.
Yep, sure did. You can't hit me.
Well, sure I can, unless you got yourself knocked up again, slut.
Stop the violence.
Hey, what is this? What happened to Miss Beat a family? Hey!
Oh, please. Stop. She has a family. She's a mother. Yeah. Walk away and tighten up your body before you get to class!
Sorry, the line, she's a mother! And all in the background, Brittany's going, stop the violence. God, it's so funny. It's so funny. You're expecting me not to like this show? That's all I'm saying, okay?
Yikes.
It's well-written television when it's everything that's not about Rachel Berry. But I found this fan fiction. There's a specific tag on AO3 called Inspired by a Hallmark Christmas Movie that I scan through every year to be like, what's new, what's hot?
Mm-hmm.
And so this year, I found one from Glee, and I was like, fuck, how do you expect me not to? That shit's funny as fuck, okay? I enjoyed my time while I was watching it. I would suggest, if you don't want to watch Glee, Mike's Mike does a really great video of just, like, breaking it down, and he breaks it down by criminal offense.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He breaks it down episode by episode, and he's like, so in this episode, Sue Sylvester commits this crime, and Rachel Berry commits this crime, and that's how he does it, and I think it's very funny.
And good
very,
for him.
It's a very different way to break down a television show, and I love it. So if you don't want to watch the entire show, because it's, like, it's very long. I don't know. It's, like, something like 7 or 8 seasons. It's a very long show. And maybe look up Best of Glee cast covers, you know? Sometimes they're really fucking good. But, so I found this one called Operation Secret Santa. And I thought, just for me. It's by author Chasing Korak. And it was written in 2017.
Damn.
So it was started December 4th, 2017. And it finished December 24th of 2017. It is 24 chapters long. And it's about 20,000 words. So it's a short one, which I thought was great for my mental stability in the month of December. As we wrap up this season of Canonically Incorrect. It's a gen fan fiction. The fandom is Glee, obviously. And the relationship are Blaine Anderson and Kurt Hummel. Like I said, I love them so much. They were great. Their relationship is great and sweet in the show. I think it's one of the best relationships, right next to, like, Santana and Brittany. Again, like, Rachel, all of her relationships are just, like, a hot garbage fire of a mess. And then, like, Matthew Morrison's relationship with Emma Pillsbury is just, like, God, what a bad way to start this relationship, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're one of the best couples in that show. Like, just amazing, incredible. It's a not well-known one. It has 6,823 hits, 431 kudos, 307 comments, and only 50 bookmarks. And the tags are workplace relationship, Christmas, Christmas fluff, alternate universe, and inspired by a Hallmark Christmas movie. So Kurt Hummel is at work when he gets an email that is not at all about work. And it says, thanks for signing up for Secret Santa this year. Your assignment is in the attachment. To get everyone talking this year, we've not included any hints for gifts. Go make a new friend. Happy holidays, everyone. Sam Evans, your friendly neighborhood HR representative. And so Kurt clicks through the attached message and almost chokes on his coffee when he reads who he will be a Secret Santa for, and that is Blaine Anderson. Under normal circumstances, this wouldn't have been a big deal, except that Blaine Anderson has been his office crush for as long as he has been hired to the company. Every morning, his eyes drift over the copy machine where his coworker makes a new pot, and every morning, Mercedes pushes him to talk to the man instead of creepily just staring at him from his cubicle. Well, it looks like her Christmas wish is about to come true, because he is going to have to talk to Blaine Anderson one way or another. Almost as if she was reading his mind, Mercedes invades his cubicle. And she says, tell me who you got. No. Why not? That's not the point of Secret Santa. I was going to try to get it out of your own free will, but no matter. I already know who you have, based on your sad little strange noise. And there's really nothing that he can hide from her. She's pushing him to flirt, but Kurt can't make himself do it in a public setting, especially one like his place of work. But what he can do is casually walk by his desk and compliment him on his festive little Christmas sweater. So he grabs some file folders from his desk, and he can't just make himself go over there and talk to him like a normal person. He has to, like, have a charade. He has to have, like, a reason why he's going over there. He originally thought he could find something Blaine left near the coffee table and conveniently return it to him. But of course, Blaine never left anything behind. He cleaned up the station, refilled the milk, arranged the sugar substitutes by color. He's the guy who left things better than they were, and for once, Kurt is pissed about it. After some more failed ideas, Kurt settles for the most basic and arguably obvious way to strike up a conversation. So he turns the corner sharply, bumps the side of the cubicle wall, and conveniently drops the folders he was carrying all over the floor in front of Blaine's cubicle. And Blaine, being the perfect gentleman he is, doesn't waste any time before he is up to help. So Kurt sighs dramatically and lifts a hand to brush his hair back. I wasn't paying attention. Oh, I can't believe I dropped all those papers right in front of you. I'm so embarrassed. No, no need to be embarrassed, Blaine replies. Happens to all of us. I don't think we've actually met. I'm Blaine. Kurt, I was trying to make a good impression, but I think I just have to settle for an impression this time. Great sweater, by the way. They've spoken three sentences to each other, but Kurt is already imagining their honeymoon, their 2.5 children, their dog in a matching Christmas sweater, everyone collectively taking professional photos for their Christmas card. You like it? Cooper got it for me. He said I needed something festive for the office. And his fantasy comes crashing around him when his eyes fall onto a framed photo of Blaine's desk. And Jesus Christ, if Kurt thought Blaine was model-esque, Cooper was a goddamn Disney prince. The men have their arms around each other, their heads pressed next to each other as they both grin radiant, stupid smiles at the camera. Is that Cooper? He asked the question, hoping that the answer was no. But of course, Kurt's not that lucky. Yeah, he got a matching sweater, insists that it'll go with the Christmas card this year. I'm still trying to talk him down from the idea of adding matching antler headbands. Kurt struggles to have a response, not wanting to look more of a fool for running off, but he can't help it as he makes an excuse for another meeting and bolts away as fast as he can. And after work, Kurt finds himself at a bar with Mercedes, drunk and complaining about the fact that his office crush is already taken, and that was a slight onto him personally. The bartender, Brittany, brings him another drink, and Mercedes gives Kurt a look. Are you sure you want another one? You seem kind of irritated. Drunk. I mean, what the hell is that? It's called a "you filthy animal," Brittany chimes in. It's cocoa, Kahlua, Bailey's, mulled red wine, and peppermint schnapps with whipped cream, chocolate sprinkles, shaved chocolate, gold glitter, and a sprinkle of cinnamon. And how many has he had? 4. Mercedes gets the drink away from him, and Kurt leans his head on the bar, still thinking of Blaine and his princely boyfriend. You do realize you don't actually know anything about this guy other than his name is Blaine and that he likes to drink coffee. Isn't that the whole point of the Secret Santa? To find out about him? You're not going to find out anything by getting drunk at the Christmas bar. And she was right, of course. She was always right. If he was going to find out about Blaine Anderson, he's going to have to do something other than drinking at this Christmas bar. He grabs the glass and tilts it back, drinking it faster than any normal person would drink something that was equal parts alcohol and sugar. He drops the empty glass and intends to say something, but instead the metric ton of liquor catches up to him and drops him like a stone onto the floor. And when Kurt wakes up, he's on the couch in his apartment, but he doesn't remember how he got to said apartment. As he struggles to get up and drink water, his phone chirps with a notification. When he finds his phone, he sees the notification came from an unknown number. And it says, "Hey Kurt, it's Blaine. I know it's early, so I hope you're still sleeping it off, but I just wanted to make sure you slept okay and are still among the land of the living and not kidnapped by the elves. You weren't sure of that when I left you at the bar last night, lol. Anyways, let me know if you need anything, water, food, the name of that pole dance instructor. See you Monday." Kurt drops his phone and can only think of one question. What the fuck happened last night? He walks into the office like death on Monday. That question ran him crazy all weekend until he could finally walk up to Mercedes' cubicle and ask her, "What the fuck happened on Friday?" "Oh, you don't remember?" "Kurt, you don't remember?" "I don't remember. We were getting drinks and I ordered another one and then nothing." "So you don't remember the Blaine of it all?" "What do you mean, the Blaine of it all?" "Hey, Mercedes," Blaine calls from the coffee bar. "Kurt?" And Kurt manages a convincing smile until Blaine disappears around the corner. "When the fuck did you become friends?" "When we left the bar, he was at the line outside. You wanted to say hi, and then he said hi back, and then you might have started word vomiting about Christmas. But not like actually vomiting. No, not like actually vomiting. And then he said he'd take you home, and since you were alive and not in a trash bag in the bottom of the lake, I assumed that you got home just fine. He took me home. Why would you leave me alone with him? You told me to take a hike and leave you with the man with God's perfect ass." And that's all the information that Mercedes has about that night. Everything else only Blaine knows, so Kurt has 3 options. 1. To ask Blaine what happened. 2. Choose to believe that Blaine dropped him off and left. Or 3. Just be left in the dark. "Oh, look," Mercedes muses, turning and clicking a few buttons on her keyboard. "I just sent that spreadsheet to the back printer. Ugh, I'm so slam. Could you go get it for me?" And Kurt grumbles even as he hops from the chair and all but runs down the hallway. And even though Kurt is quick to come and go, the printer is taking its sweet little time. Kurt's cursing at it until he hears a voice behind him. And he turns to see Blaine's smiling face. "Are you feeling better this morning?" "Oh, yeah, well, a bit. A fraction. Water did help." "I bet. Hey, thanks for listening Friday night. That really helped a lot." And oh fuck, he cannot remember a thing Blaine told him. So he just agrees with him, stating that he's always been told he's a very good listener. Blaine says, "I took what you said to heart, so could you help me with the gift? Of course, sounds great. Just put it on my calendar." "Great." Blaine gives his arm a squeeze before letting go and smiling. "Tomorrow then." Kurt agrees with the time and walks back to the cubicle, wondering why and how and what the fuck he got himself roped into. And tomorrow afternoon, they'd already been in 3 shops, and Kurt still has no idea what or who they are looking for. And by this point, he figures it would just be way too embarrassing to ask, especially now that he's that he's staring at Blaine, talking about how ornaments aren't personal, perfect to not cross a line, but enough to make someone happy. Would that be a good gift for your mother? Blaine turns, slightly confused. What does my mother have to do with this? Your sister, Kurt dries. Your maiden aunt, fourth grade teacher. I'm sorry, Blaine. I don't remember who we are shopping for. And I didn't yesterday when you asked me to go shopping. And I thought I could fake it all and pick up some context clues. But seriously, you give no context clues whatsoever. Blaine stares at him for a second before dissolving into laughter. Oh, Kurt, I didn't. I'm so sorry. I didn't realize you didn't remember. We're not shopping for my mom. We're shopping for my secret Santa. And somehow, it feels like relief to Kurt. Laughing with Kurt, who is saying that he's so embarrassed that he's dragged Kurt around for half an hour with no knowledge as to why or who he's doing it for. Wait, sorry, do you have Rachel Berry? Blaine nods. Every time I go up to the second floor, she's lecturing a different person at the large format copier about, God, I've heard why cheese is murder, how the Grammys are rigged against the nasally endowed, and something about how silhouette horse sweaters are making a comeback. Sam said that you worked on a couple projects with her and might have some ideas of something that she wouldn't completely hate. Okay, so here's what you're gonna do. Just accept that you are going to fail. Take the pressure off. You are not going to impress her. So just accept that. That sounds perfect, Blaine says, giving Kurt a little smile. Okay, well, let's get to picking out a mediocre office fail of a present. After you. It's dark as they stroll down the street, the only lights coming from shining Christmas trees and storefront displays. Kurt looks up at the lights, but his eye is slipped down to watch Blaine. He doesn't think Blaine could be any more attractive than when he's neatly dressed in the office. But there was something different about him now. There was something about him, and it made Kurt's heart flip. He doesn't realize how long he's been staring until Blaine's eyes meet his. But Blaine doesn't turn away or ask why Kurt's staring, just smiles, unwraps his scarf, and loops it around Kurt. Your cheeks are pink. Don't want you to catch your death. I'm healthier than I look. You didn't have to do this. What kind of gentleman would I be if I didn't offer my scarf to my companion? I'm lucky you wore a coat, or I'd be forced to give you mine, and well. Blaine's standing so close to him, and his hand is still lingering on his shoulder. It would be so easy to just lean over and kiss him, especially now that Blaine is looking at him with the sweetest eyes and leaning in on his own. But the moment is broken when Blaine's phone rings. Blaine takes a step back, checking to see who is calling. Hey, Coop. What's up? The boyfriend, Kurt reminds himself, taking a step back to compose himself. Blaine has a boyfriend. A gorgeous, probably thoughtful and considerate boyfriend who probably makes waffles from scratch and kisses him awake in the morning, who is probably calling Blaine to tell him that he loves him and can't wait for him to come home. Sorry about that. Cooper forgot I wasn't coming home for dinner and wanted to know why there was no food. Do you need a rain check on dinner? He's an adult. He can fend for himself. Besides, I did promise you dinner. A week passes, and Kurt still has Blaine's scarf. Mercedes keeps telling him that Blaine is going to notice that it's missing at some point. And it wasn't until Kurt stops avoiding Blaine that he notices that Blaine is avoiding him. And he ponders, is he angry at Kurt that he was hoarding his scarf, or that they'd been close to doing something out on the street in the cold? And they very well might have if he hadn't been phone-blocked by Blaine's boyfriend. Since he doesn't seem to be able to catch Blaine by the office, he buckles up the courage and makes his way towards Blaine's office, scarf folded neatly in his hands. Hey, stranger, Kurt says at his arrival. Blaine turns, his serious expression blossoming into a blinding smile. He doesn't even seem to notice his missing scarf or is even a little angry at Kurt's avoidance, chucking it up to end-of-year deadlines, same as him. He does inform Kurt that he found a present for Rachel, and that reminds Kurt that he has still yet to give Blaine anything. Blaine offers up to trade services. Kurt helps him wrap the present, and Blaine can be a sounding board for Secret Santa gift ideas. Why don't I come over to your place, and you can help me wrap, and I can help you brainstorm your gift? And really, what does Kurt have to lose? Yeah, that sounds great. Tomorrow evening? Great. Blaine beams. It's a date. Kurt finds himself back at the Christmas bar, talking his problems out to Mercedes and Brittany. The bar is busy with everyone trying to get their fill of delicious cocktails and holiday spirits after long days at work. Do you want a punch on your sexy Santa card? Brittany asks. Kurt and Mercedes both whip out their cards, with Mercedes getting a third punch and Kurt's a tenth, which completes his card. He signs his name on the back and grins as the bartender drops the completed signed card into the giant stocking behind the bar. What are we doing these for again? Mercedes asks. Christmas Eve lap dance from Sexy Santa, Kurt says. And I'm winning. I'll have another. What's this one called again? The Long Island of Misfit Toys.
I can say that I'm not a fan of these, yes.
Of the names of the cocktails, I think they're great.
They're too long.
The first one was not long. Me swiping up. What the fuck was that name again?
These are just like, I'd be too embarrassed to say them out loud.
Oh, sure.
So it's a no for me.
In high school, Dutch Brothers has a drink called Sex on the Beach.
Why?
And it's
their
really
good.
Their
primary demographic is like teenagers.
It was like really good. It was like strawberry and banana. And
what
like,
the fuck?
It was called Sex on the Beach. And it would be one of those things where you're like, Sex on the Beach, please. Where you like don't want to say it too loud because you're like 17 and like.
My God.
You're in a room. You're like in
Look
a car
full
of your friends. I know. So Kurt has been here a lot, looking to talk out his problems and drinks. And drink as much as he can in the process. And Mercedes isn't helpful, as she keeps telling him that Blaine does like him back. And even if it was the truth, another truth was that Blaine was taken. But this new development of their quote-unquote date, as Blaine says, even has Kurt confused. It was probably just a figure of speech, Kurt insists. He invited himself over to your place, Mercedes points out. No one does that unless they're clueless or flirting. I'm just going to act as if nothing's changed, Kurt says, because then, if I'm wrong, I can be pleasantly surprised. But in the meantime, he adds, tipping back his glass and finishing off with a flourish, I'm going to get started on my next punch card. Kurt has spent a million years straightening up his apartment, and he can't get it clean enough, presentable enough, before there's a knock at his door. Kurt calmly lets Blaine in, takes his scarf, the same one Kurt just gave back to him, and Blaine takes out a bottle of wine that he brought. But this is definitely not a date, even though this man just bought you a bottle of wine to wrap Christmas presents. Blaine pours a couple glasses while Kurt gets the wrapping paper and other supplies out. He is a little nervous about the alcohol, thinking back to their last interaction with Kurt drinking a little too much. Even though he's trying not to, Kurt realizes that he's setting himself up for disappointment. And this always happens. He falls for a guy, sets up the guy as some imaginary bastion of perfection, and then is disappointed when reality doesn't live up to the fantasy. And without realizing it, he's doing that to Blaine. He has a boyfriend, they work together. Everything about this situation was destined to lead to disappointment. Kurt wraps Rachel's gift quickly, and there's no reason for Blaine to stay at his apartment. But Blaine just grins at Kurt. Hey, so I don't have to rush out. It's still pretty early. How do you feel about cheesy cable Christmas movies? I love them, Kurt replies. Inevitably, someone always gets together with the help of Santa Claus. Kurt looks over the entire situation. Blaine on the couch with their matching glasses of wine, Christmas music playing softly, warmth surrounding them. It was just a movie, and it was barely 6 p.m. What could possibly happen? Kurt is cozy and blissful as he and Blaine pick fun at the Christmas movie that's totally not a Hallmark movie, by the way. Absolutely not a Hallmark movie.
Mm-hmm.
What if? Kurt begins, building off this princely Santa movie in front of them. He was secretly the prince of a made-up European country who was in desperate need of a bride but didn't want the one he was currently betrothed to. And then he realizes that he didn't want his girlfriend because he has met an American guy who works as a barista in a coffee shop next to the house he rented to get away from it all, Blaine adds. Yeah. And then he has to reassess these new feelings for this guy that he never thought possible. But damn all the naysayers, Blaine says. He deserves to be happy. So he and the barista finally share a kiss under the Christmas tree and they go back to their fake country of Aldovia or Finnberg and have the biggest, most extravagant gay wedding cable TV has ever seen. Blaine holds out his glass to toast Kurt, and I would watch the hell out of that. There's an untapped market for romantic holiday stories with two male leads. Which he's right. by the way.
Jesus Christ.
Spitting facts. There's about three, maybe two, but I'm going to say three Hallmark Christmas movies with the main characters who are falling in love, who are men. And then the first lesbian one comes out this year.
Mm.
It's the first representation we have for the lesbians.
Let's go, lesbians.
They've been in side characters.
The background.
They've been in the background. But this is the first time where they get to fall in love.
Nice.
And I do think it's funny. There's probably a ton others like that aren't Hallmark. I'm going off. This is inspired by a Hallmark movie, okay? And they have that guy, Hallmark. When they started, like, in 2020, it was their first movie where they had, like, a gay couple ever in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, the first gay kiss or something like that. And for all of the movies that have, like, a gay man in it, it's the guy who played Aaron Samuels in Mean Girls. Later in life, he came out as gay, and now he's, like, Hallmark's token gay man.
Nice.
He's, like, in all of them. Every single time they need, like, a gay character, one of them is always...
Good for him.
This man. I am excited to see the lesbian one this year, because there has not been girls loving girls Hallmark movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for that. Again, they've been in the background. There is a movie called A Very Merry Bridesmaid with Emily Osment that her best friends are like a lesbian couple who have twin boys.
Nice.
But Kurt and Blaine are right. And this wasn't how Kurt had seen the evening going. He thought they'd either sit on the opposite sides of the couch, quietly watching a cheesy movie until it ended, and Blaine politely excuses himself in order to get home to more important things. But instead, they were planning gay Hallmark movies, and Kurt was realizing that it was getting very hard to just be friends with Blaine. "Have you found the perfect something for your Secret Santa?" Blaine asks. "No, my assignment is difficult. More difficult than Rachel Berry." "No, difficult in a different way. It matters what this person thinks. I don't want to disappoint with a gift." "I don't think you can disappoint anyone with any gift," Blaine says. "Maybe take a hint from an interaction you've had together, something you've shared." "Yeah, probably," Kurt murmurs. They are alone in his apartment on the same couch. And each time they speak, Kurt finds himself inching closer and closer to him. "Maybe something sweet." "Something sweet is great." Blaine turns to fold his leg up on the couch and ends up brushing Kurt's thigh with his knee. "I guarantee that whoever is lucky enough to be on the receiving end of your present will love it." Kurt realizes his hand is still lingering on Blaine's knee, but Blaine hasn't pulled away yet, and oh, Blaine's hand is on his knee. Blaine smiles and he looks down and gives Kurt's hand a squeeze. Blaine says his name quietly. The music is playing softly, the lights are dim, and Kurt can't keep his mind from promising him that this is the moment that Blaine confesses his love, tells him he left his boyfriend and wants them to run away together. Kurt leans forward in anticipation, his eyes flutter close, but nothing happens. "Oh, Kurt, I'm sorry."
Mm-hmm.
The world around Kurt shatters. His eyes open to see Blaine pull back. He stutters through some excuse about talking to people and this decision being life-ruining until he gets up to leave. "I'll see you at work, okay?" Blaine says as he leaves. "Thanks for the help."
Tough. Learn how to read a room, idiot.
I think I would never come into work ever again.
Yeah, that's fair.
Gotta be honest. I think I'd be like, so the fact that it's like, "I think you're gonna kiss me." And then just to hear, "I'm sorry." "Oh, no, you know what? I'm sorry. I'll let myself out of my own apartment. Thank you so much."
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna use the window this time.
Window. Yeah. I'll go over the balcony, actually. I'll go down that way. Yeah, I'd be putting in my letter of resignation that day. "Sorry, can't do it." I like understand workplace romances are so iffy, like, because of that reason of like, if a date from someone you met on Tinder, for say, goes badly, you never have to see that person again,
right?
But someone you work with, I see my coworkers more than I see my best friends. If that goes poorly, suddenly I have to be like, "Well, I guess I have to see you four more times this week." So Kurt has thought about what he would do when he was eventually rejected. Cry about it, think longingly about the future they could have had, but instead, he's mad. He said he'd lose everything, he says to Mercedes. "He doesn't want to lose his boyfriend over me." Would you really want to date a guy who would cheat on his boyfriend, even for you? And she was right, of course. Of course, Kurt doesn't want someone who would hop from relationship to relationship like that. And maybe, you should give him the benefit of the doubt, Mercedes continues. Maybe there's an issue that's not related to you at all. You know, sometimes you're not the center of the universe. Sometimes, very rarely, Kurt says. But it's been 3 days. You think he would have wanted to say something to me by now. And even as Kurt says this, he knows it's not fully the truth. Because he's the same guy who held this office crush in secret for forever and used the Secret Santa as an in. So Blaine isn't the only one keeping any secrets. And speaking of Secret Santa, Kurt couldn't just ignore that. He's hurt, but he doesn't want to hurt Blaine. Why don't we go put the gift under the tree, grab a drink from the bottle of wine that I've hidden in the back of the fridge on the second floor, and get this office party over with, Mercedes suggests. The party will be over, the Secret Santa exchange will be over, and you won't have to think about him anymore if you don't want to. Plus, it's Christmas Eve, which means that we can go see Santa Stripper at the Christmas bar. It'll be your reward for getting through with your dignity intact, and then we can make sure that you go sit on his lap and ruin your dignity there like a respectable human being. And of course, because it's just his luck, the first person who Kurt finds is Blaine. He turns at the sound of Blaine's bright, beautiful, cheerful voice. And how could he look so happy? Didn't he know that he stomped on Kurt's heart? And Kurt wanted to scream. But he doesn't let his smile slip. Long time no see, Kurt says. Yeah, I've actually been trying to catch you, but you've been away from your desk for the past couple days. Yeah, meetings, terrible, huh? But I'll see you at the gift exchange, right? He doesn't give Blaine time to say anything more before he turns with Mercedes and starts walking quickly through the hallway, not risking to look back. And Kurt finds Sam Evans, the friendly neighborhood HR rep, who is manning the alcohol counter. He serves Kurt with the wine they had, wishing they had something stronger, and he voices this want to Sam, and this goody-two-shoes, or at least that's what he thought, opens a filing cabinet full of liquor. Thanks, Kurt says. I really appreciate it, but I think I will stick with the wine. I've got to get through the next hour or so without making a complete fool out of myself. Probably a good idea, Sam says. The boss is actually going to make a few announcements, and there will be a personal announcement that I know you will be excited for, Kurt. What do you mean? Personal announcement I'll be excited for? Oh, have you not talked to Blaine? What does Blaine have to do with this? Jesus, even when he's trying to avoid the guy who ran out on him, he keeps coming up in conversation. Was the universe trying to get back at him or something? Sam clearly realizes he said the wrong thing and refuses to say anything more, not wanting to say something he shouldn't. Full of confusion and anger, Kurt turns away from Mercedes and Sam and leaves to find Blaine. And of course, the minute Kurt tries to find Blaine, he's magically nowhere to be found. The floor is crammed with people, co-workers Kurt knows, co-workers he doesn't, bosses of bosses of bosses that Kurt couldn't care less about. And he spots Blaine by the Christmas tree and has to push forward to get to him. The crowds are worse here. It is, after all, where the Secret Santa gifts have been assembled, where the few snacks that management provided were set up, and where Blaine Anderson is standing, laughing with a couple of girls from finance. Kurt calls out for Blaine, and as if his voice was the North Star, Blaine finds him immediately and weaves his way through the crowd to him. He wants an explanation. He wants to apologize for being short, for being absent. But they don't get time until the CEO of the company takes the stage. Welcome, everyone, to this year's annual holiday party. I'm so excited to see everyone having such a good time tonight. And I promise that I will keep my remarks brief. It's the standard corporate spiel of expanded sales and hard work, and we couldn't do it without you that was trotted out every year. But Kurt isn't listening to a word of it. He is staring at Blaine until he hears the CEO's speech return to just that. And finally, there's one last announcement we wanted to make before everyone disappears for the holidays. We were all sad when Emma left to join the nonprofit and were wondering who was going to take over management of her team. So I am pleased to announce that Blaine Anderson will be taking over her position and moving to the fourth floor immediately after the holidays. Let's have a round of cheers for our newest project leader. And everyone around him erupts in cheers and congratulations, but Kurt's heart sinks. Blaine is management now, and there are rules against dating management, hard and fast sexual harassment-based rules that were meticulously enforced, listen to this, ever since the Schuster incident of 2012. I had to leave that in there. I really did have to leave that in there.
What he deserves.
Love that everyone shits on this man left and right.
As they should.
The Schuster incident of 2012? I want to know this. As
they should.
I want to know this now. What intern did he hit on? I need to know. But now that Blaine is going to another floor, there wouldn't even be an excuse to catch him at the coffee bar near his desk. All Kurt wants to do is leave. Leave this wretched party, go to the Christmas bar and get horrendously drunk, and maybe get a lap dance from Sexy Santa, but he still has obligations. He still needs to make face. He walks away from Blaine and towards the tree to grab his secret Santa present. It's in a small silver bag, and when Kurt pulls the tissue paper out, he finds a $20 Starbucks gift card. Quite the least thought out gift anyone could have given. This whole day was kind of just turning into a bust. His attention is yet again pulled to Blaine. Blaine is opening a meticulously wrapped gold foil package. Kurt watches Blaine's eyes light up as he pulls the plaid wool scarf out of the box, and he watches him offering his friends a feel of the cozy fabric before wrapping it around his neck and showing it off. Sure, it was higher than the $20 limit, but Blaine's reaction makes it worth it. From the moment Blaine had offered his scarf to keep Kurt warm, he knew what he was going to do for Blaine's secret Santa gift. And now Kurt could take a little bit of satisfaction in the fact that a small part of him would be going up to the fourth floor with Blaine. In that moment, Blaine's eyes find Kurt. He waves at him, and Kurt waves back, but doesn't move towards his gravitational pull. Maybe they aren't meant to be together. Maybe Blaine would spend the rest of his life with another and move up the ranks in his career, making a little life without Kurt. But seeing Blaine smile like that in reaction to something Kurt did had to be enough. With the secret Santa gifts opened, there's no need to stick around the office any longer. He turns to find Mercedes, and in the time he turns his back on him, Blaine has snuck up on him. Kurt, hi, congratulations on the promotion. Thanks, I wanted to tell you before, but things kept getting in the way. But it's great news, isn't it? Blaine is beaming, absolutely radiating happiness in a way that makes Kurt feel even worse. As he smiles down on Kurt like that, Blaine's hand reaches up to brush against the scarf. I should thank my secret Santa for such a great gift. I think he was afraid that I was in danger of getting too cold. Do you like it? Kurt asks before he can think better of it. I love it, Blaine replies. I think my secret Santa has really good taste. I think your secret Santa knew you had a habit of loaning out your outerwear to poor, cold work associates, and he wanted to make sure you had a backup. Kurt shrugs. Spoiler alert, I am your secret Santa. I already knew that. And Kurt's heart stops. He wants to ask Blaine how he knew Kurt was his secret Santa, but he's found by his co-workers to drag him out of the party and towards the bar. Blaine gets the invitation to join them at the bar and watch someone get grinded on by sexy Santa, but Kurt watches Blaine's face melt from glowing happiness to irritation. I have no desire to watch a sexy Santa give a lap dance. Besides, I was hoping to spend the evening with someone special. Kurt's stomach drops at Blaine's words, but Blaine is looking at Kurt with hopeful, expectant eyes. You don't need sexy Santa, Blaine continues. Why don't you let me? Look, some of us are single, and maybe sexy Santa is the only chance we get of any action this holiday. Not all of us are dating a goddamn Disney prince who, if I didn't know any better, was just photoshopped into that picture on your desk, because no human being could actually look like that, but apparently your boyfriend actually fucking does. And I get it, you're amazing, and you deserve a guy who looks just like Michelangelo sculpted him, but I am single and alone and a little frustrated at the circumstances around me, so I am going to go and hopefully get felt up by sexy Santa and see if I can't get beard burn on my farts or other associated parts. As Kurt is absolutely letting all of his frustration from the last week out on Blaine, he's guided away from him and the room so fast that he doesn't even hear Blaine call out, "What boyfriend?" The miracle on 10th Street is packed with people. People who are avoiding their responsibilities, people doing it for their Instagram, people who are drinking for a chance to sit on sexy Santa's lap, and Kurt is all of these people. He is drinking as much as he can, putting in card after card, hoping that one of them will get pulled. And when Brittany grabs the stocking and carries it through the crowd to Santa's chair, Kurt is tingling. All right, everyone. Thank you for coming to celebrate Christmas Eve at the Miracle on 10th Street. Since we know you have been very good little boys and girls, we have a special visitor tonight. All the way from the North Pole, please give it up for the one and only Santa Claus. Sexy does not do this man justice. As Santa emerges behind the bar and makes his way to the large throne in the corner of the room, the low-slung red pants, tall black boots, and stiff leather belt are the only clothes he had on. Unless you count glitter as an article of clothing, because he's oiled with a glitter lotion that accentuates every ridge and dip of his muscles that flex and stretch as he walks. When Santa sits down on the chair, Kurt realizes he's seen this Santa before, but he can't place where he is. But he can't exactly place where he's seen this man. Santa, Brittany asks, will you do the honors to see who our big winner is? Santa rummages around the stocking for a minute while grinning. And the winner is, he says, pulling out a card, Kurt Hummel! Any lingering confusion over where he'd seen Santa before evaporates as soon as his name is called. He's rubbing it in his friend's face. He's hooting and hollering all the way to the big man's chair. Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas blast as Kurt has sat on the chair and the Santa gets his knees on either side of Kurt's thigh, grinding along as Kurt is sure he was going to die and go to heaven. Have you ever thought, you've seen the videos of like people getting pulled onto stage from like Thunder Down Under shows or like the Chippendales?
The thing is I think I would, but I would be so embarrassed.
Would you?
Oh yeah.
I think at least half of them are probably embarrassed to be up there.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Because it's like half of the ones that you see are like, they lay you down on the dirty ass fucking stage and then they like hump over you and it's like, this is kind of awful. Like, this isn't sexy in any regards. Like, you put me on a disgusting floor that you've been dancing on all night.
And then you shake your ass in my face.
You don't even look at me in the eyes. And it's just like your abs moving up. And it's like, dude, come on.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's why you go to those things, right? Like, to see. I don't know if it's, like, specifically to be pulled on stage. Because that's, like, maybe they do that to, like, a handful of people.
Right. It just seems like an odd. Again, to me, audience bachelor participation and bachelorette parties have always been, like, an odd thing. Sure. Especially the customs, quote unquote, around them. Uh-huh. Where it's like, oh, you get strippers. And it's like, it's not your last day being single. Mm-hmm. You haven't been single in a long time. What are we talking about?
Yeah. I also, I'm always curious about like those shows. Because obviously in the fic, it's like they pull a name out of a hat and whatever.
No, I think it's like, oh, these people have an event. It's like the birthday thing at restaurants. Yeah. Where it's like, someone has a special birthday.
It's like, she's getting married. Or like, it's her 30th birthday. Or like, whatever. Yeah, I can see that. I was just like, I wonder how, like, do they just think you're hot in the audience? And they're like, that one?
No, I'm pretty sure it's like a best maid or whatever.
Oh, what the maid of honor?
Yeah. It's like,
she's getting married. Maybe
pull up on the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be like close enough to the stage that like, they don't have to like,
I'm sure it's like a, you know, when you go to like medieval times or whatever, mm-hmm. and they're like, are you coming for a special event? Oh, and you like type and you let them know and you're like, and then you pay a little extra for something. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's what it is.
Okay. Another question. Play a mind game with me.
Okay.
Does it matter what they like? If the man who pulled you on stage was dressed exactly like Asterion.
Yeah.
That would be, yes?
Yeah, 100%. Yes. Okay. Sexy vampire.
Uh-huh.
Chippendale.
Right.
Sexy vampire, please. Mm-hmm. That's how it would go.
Yeah.
Listen, have you seen, you've probably only ever seen his fancy outfit, but like his bed, like they change clothes into like their bedtime clothes. It's nothing extremely fancy. Mm-hmm. But I would fuck anyone that wears, it's like leather pants mm-hmm. and like that white fluffy shirt.
Oh like yeah, the pirate shirt.
The
man slut shirt.
Yes!
Yeah.
You're telling me you wouldn't fuck a man that wears that shirt?
I can't.
That encompasses pirates, mm-hmm. medieval people, mm-hmm. of any sense, whether that be vampire, mm-hmm. wizard, mm-hmm. mage, it mm-hmm. doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. That's a whole category of its own, yeah. That fucking shirt.
Yeah. So if there was like a medieval times strip club.
Yeah. If the Ren Faire ever did an 18 plus event, I 100% would go.
That would slay so hard, actually.
You know what? We got to keep an eye on during Ren Faire season to see if anyone does that sort of stuff. Hey, man. Because I would be down.
I think people put so little into the fact of, like, role-playing of, like, dress up as a sexy vampire and we'll see where this goes. Do you know what I mean?
That's all I want in life.
That's it.
To be perfectly honest with you.
Sexy vampire.
If someone was willing to do that for me, yeah, mm-hmm. they're getting their ducks dick sucked. Jesus. I combined dick and suck at the same time.
That's yeah. fun. Yeah.
I mean, for you.
Yeah. Who would it be for me?
If they had a pair of, like, angel wings on?
I don't know if, like, angel wings specifically, like, devil wings, I think, would do it. Because we talked in the Monster Fucker episode. I was like, demons right. are... Yeah. Yeah, demons are pretty hot. There's something about, like... And this is probably just for women, and I'm probably just speaking to the choir because that's kind of who our audience is.
Right.
More clothes, the better.
Yeah.
Tight shirt, leather pants.
Listen, I'm all about tight pants, baggy shirt.
Yeah.
And the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, tight, give me the little
yep.
turtleneck sleeveless top. Again, that's the Toji outfit.
Hey, man.
With the baggy ass pants.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm also fucking you in that. Like, I don't care.
The sluttiest thing a man can wear is a turtleneck sweater. Sorry. It's wintertime.
Or, like, one of those compression athletic shirts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. If somehow a man is listening to this podcast, I suggest you go find yourself a large cable knit turtleneck sweater.
Watch and see Knives what it Out. Does
for you.
You just have to look out for Chris Evans yep. at any point during that movie.
See what it does for you. I think it'll do wonders.
You will get. You will get some.
I'm just saying.
This is a guarantee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, like, a devil, like, have you ever seen the show Lucifer?
No.
So there's, like, the main character of Lucifer.
Right.
He dresses up, like, very well.
I've seen, like, clips and stuff and trailers from the show.
I think anything like that, I think, would be very attractive. In terms of, like, the thing is I don't particularly know, except for Hawks. The eye makeup really does it for Hawks for me.
I
like
see.
the black eyeliner that he kind of like look that he has going. But other than that, I don't know if I have any other like fictional characters that have like a specific, like Asterion has like a specific look with like the silver hair and like obviously the vampire-ness.
Right.
But other than like Hawks, I can't think of one off the top of my head that I'm like, that's a specific look I'm going for.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, to be totally honest with you, even the Chip and Dale's, like, classic look, where yeah. it's just, like, the little pink collar and yeah. the pants, does nothing for me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if they had a star in...
You're like, give me a kind of sickly-looking vampire.
Yeah, I'm gonna ride him all night long.
Ride him all night long. He doesn't even have to give me a lap dance. I'll do it for him. He Real. Doesn't have to ask. Not a thing.
Not at all.
So Kurt is in this lap dance roleplay situation where someone is dressed as Santa Claus.
Uh-huh.
And while he is being... grinded on, danced on, the Santa says, "So Kurt Hummel, what do you want for Christmas besides this?" Kurt laughs and his brain has shut down. He's lavishing in the moment, being the center of attention and being the apple of this man's eye even for a second. But then he glances over Santa's shoulder, and there in the back of the crowd watching the show is Blaine Anderson, and he looks very angry, arms crossed, glaring at Kurt, and his heart drops, the music fades in his ear. "I want the hot guy in my office to dump his stupid boyfriend and fall in love with me," Kurt admits before he can think better of it. "What's his name?" Santa says. "Blaine." Sexy Santa pulls back and looks at Kurt, not with any heat or anger or passion, just studies him until all the right pieces fall into line in his brain. "Wait, you're that, Kurt? Oh my god, Blaine talks about you all the time." And is that at that moment that Kurt realizes why Santa looks so familiar. The smile, the cut jawline, the fact that he knows who Blaine is. "Cooper? Oh my god, it's very great to meet you. You know, I didn't mean to say I wanted to date your boyfriend." "Boyfriend?" Cooper laughs. "I'm not his boyfriend, I'm his brother." "His brother? Yeah, damn, you know, he's been talking about you nonstop, irritated about some stupid can't date a member of your work team rules." And Kurt finds Blaine again in the crowd. He's still angry, still glaring, but Kurt realizes that it's not anger on his face, but hurt. "Stupid rule, if you ask me," Kurt continues. "Didn't he ask you out now that he's on another team? You should say yes, you know. I know he's a little dorky, but Blaine is great, and I taught him, like, half of my moves." Kurt doesn't even register the question because he's watching Blaine shake his head and turn to exit the bar. Kurt, in a moment of pure panic, shoves Cooper off of him and launches himself off the stage, calling for Blaine all the way out. As soon as Kurt is outside, he wishes he had his coat. The cold December air is biting right through his sweater, but he doesn't have any time to waste by going inside to find something warmer. He has to talk to Blaine to apologize, to tell him that he was wrong. He made too many stupid assumptions. He has to make sure he isn't too late. Kurt finds him on a bench outside the park across the street. He doesn't look at Kurt as he takes a seat beside him. I saw you at the back of the bar. Blaine finally looks at him. The irritation is still on his face, but his cheeks are becoming rosier by the minute due to the cold. And it's harder to look irritated with rosy cheeks and those lush eyelashes. I'm surprised, Blaine says. You seemed preoccupied. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said those things at the office. It wasn't fair of me to unload all of my single frustrations on you in that moment. Plus, I now realize that I was incredibly off base. Kurt wraps his arms around himself, both to ward off the cold and to hide whatever small part of his shame he could. I thought Cooper was your boyfriend. Cooper? You thought I was dating my brother? I didn't know he was your brother. I just thought he was your incredibly attractive boyfriend on your desk, and in my head, every time you wanted to spend some time with someone special, you were spending it with him. How could you think that was my boyfriend? We talked about it that night. The night you took me home? Yeah. I don't remember anything about that night. Not you taking me home, not anything we said to each other, not a thing. Oh. Why didn't you say anything? I mean, I just thought you'd forgotten about shopping with Rachel. I didn't know it was basically talking to a void. Kurt doesn't know what to say. He's embarrassed that a situation where he lied to not to be embarrassed has come to bite him in the ass. He didn't want Blaine to think he was a drunk or sloppy or anything. He wanted Blaine to think he was great. Blaine smiles. Kurt, you're amazing. That night just made me realize a lot, and man, it sucks that you don't remember it. And after that, I just wanted to get to know you more. We just had to be careful about work, but I got moved to management on a 4. But I'm not allowed to date management. Kurt, you can't date management or other members on your team. Why do you think I pushed so hard to get this transfer? I was due to be reviewed in a year, but I convinced them to do it now. We're on different teams now. And Kurt is too stunned, or maybe too frozen, to say anything. You really should read the employee handbook more closely, Blaine laughs. And in the silence of this December night, Kurt realizes that he's fine. They are fine. A true blue Christmas miracle has fallen into his lap, no matter how many times he tried to run away from it. He starts to laugh, but it comes out as his teeth chattering instead. Oh, you must be freezing, Blaine says. He unwraps his scarf and drapes it around Kurt's shoulders. Don't worry about returning this quickly. Some big-hearted secret Santa got me a spare. Let me guess. I told you I was your secret Santa when I was drunk. But you made me promise not to tell myself your secret. God, I'm an idiot. Blaine laughs, and Kurt is sure that it is the best sound he's ever heard. So, different teams? Different teams. He reaches out to grab Blaine's hand. No boyfriend? Nope. No boyfriend. Blaine's face is under the light of the street lamp. There are so many more questions to ask, conversations to have, but Kurt forces himself to stop thinking as he leans forward and kisses Blaine. He tastes like candy canes and snow and reindeer sweaters and spare scarves in the biting December air. They don't break until Kurt feels something icy on his cheek. He pulls back to find snowflakes falling around them, catching themselves in Blaine's dark hair and impossibly long lashes, making him shine even more in the moonlight. Hey, are you doing anything now? Blaine asks. Did you have something in mind? Kurt Hummel, could I take you out to dinner? Blaine asks. He stands up and offers Kurt his arm on a real, honest-to-God date. Kurt doesn't hesitate to stand up and link his arm in Blaine's. I think that sounds like the best Christmas gift of all. And that is Operation Secret Santa by Chasing Korak.
Nice.
I love Christmas! If I could fall in love during Christmas, I think my life could be complete. If I could, like, live a Hallmark Christmas movie where it's just holly and jolly, and the conflict is so fucking minor that it never, like, makes any sense or, like, doesn't really matter in the end, and then I could just go on, like, little Christmas dates and wear sweaters and bake cookies with someone and, like, decorate a tree with... I would be at peace. I would be blissful.
I know. I'm well aware.
Dear God, what else do I have to do?
Girly, I don't think God's listening.
When is it my turn?
I don't know. It's not our turns ever.
Some people, like, fantasize about, like, a vacation romance. you know, where oh, it's yeah. like, oh, you know, we meet on vacation and I never see them again. Or like a summer fling. Mine, Hallmark Christmas movie romance. I don't care. Just once. Just for once. Please.
Gotta get on Hinge more, girl.
Yeah, my Hinge is just like, please make my life into a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Yeah.
I expect baking cookies, drinking hot cocoa by a fire. I expect watching Hallmark Christmas movies and like going like, we could do that and that and that. Ice skating. I think ice skating while dating is so cute because you have to like, you have to hold hands because you're bad at it.
You don't have to.
I have to because I can't keep my balance. Like, I have to be holding on to someone.
Scary.
I'm not, like, that well-equipped in the art of figure skating or ice skating that, like, I have to be... The couple times I've gone with friends, like, it's so much easier to be holding on to each other and, like, use each other as, like, stability points. So it's like, oh, no, I have to. Also, because when I was, like, a teenager, I was there with a couple of friends at the, like, only ice rink that we have in the valley. And there was, like, a couple who was, like, our age, like, in high school or whatever, on a date. And the boy knew how to ice skate and the girl didn't. And he was standing in front of her, like, holding her hands and, like, skating backwards while she was... So, when's it my turn?
Maybe you should go to the ice rink more.
Could you imagine just being at the ice rink, just being like, oh, no! Falling over. Oh, no! I don't know. It would be fun. The thing is about the local ice rink is that you have to pay every single time you go in there.
Yeah, that's tough.
How much money do I spend until I'm like, I'm not finding the love of my life here?
It's not happening.
It's not happening. So I don't know what I have to do, but I think this is my application for one Hallmark Christmas movie to happen to my life. Please and thank you. If you could fall in love during one holiday, what would it be?
I'm not like,
yeah, I know.
I know. This is weird because I'm not like a big like holiday person. I feel like Halloween or New Year's.
Ooh, New Year's is a good one. New Year's is a good one. I read a really good New Year's fanfic and I think it was. We all get the idea from High School Musical, right? Where they, like, sung together on New Year's Eve. And then, like, they parted ways and then met up again in high school, obviously. And I read a really good fan fiction about the same thing of just, like, met at a New Year's Eve party. And then they, like, hung out and they were each other's kisses. Like, their New Year's Eve kisses. And then they, like, didn't see each other until, like, later into the fic. And you're just right. That is good. That is good.
No, I do, like, I've thought about New Year's kisses before. I've never had one.
Neither have I. It's a tragedy.
I've had, like, friends. Yes. You know, where it's like...
that's a pity kiss.
A little smooch. And then, like, a lot of my friends are Hispanic, and so they do the 12 grapes. So a lot of them just do that. And I like that tradition a lot, too, but I do really like the New Year's kiss.
I do, too.
I feel like New Year's is the one holiday this time of the year, late year, and even at the early start of the year, where I'm like, yeah, that's a good holiday.
That is a good holiday.
Because it's not like, it's just the start of a new year. Like, there's no religious attachment. There's no, like, no, it's just a day to fucking celebrate. It's literally just a day that everyone was like, yeah,
yeah,
we made it one time around. Let's do it again.
We did it again, guys. We'd celebrate still being alive. No, that's a good one. Yeah, I'll take Christmas, you'll take New Year's. And we're going to find the loves of our lives.
God, please.
God willing. Thank you for listening to another episode of Canonically Incorrect. You can follow us on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram and Tumblr. You can send us your fan fiction recommendations. Or if you're a fan fiction author that would like to be on our show, email us at canonicallyincorrectpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support us, you can donate a one-time donation at ko-fi.com/canonicallyincorrect. You can subscribe to our Patreon monthly at patreon.com/canonicallyincorrect. Thank you to our Patreons, Autumnal River and Riley C, for your continued support.
Donate to AO3.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye. Bye.